space and everything. So settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Nick and Sylvia.
This is Sylvie Avery, and welcome to Spirit's Work, the metaphysical, paranormal, and spiritual information show that is designed to stretch your mind and help you to think outside of the box. On today's show, as usual, my husband Mick will be deep trance channeling, and we are doing part 12, I believe, of our program about Gregory's journey in the spirit world. Anyway, if you'd like to join us with a question for Gregory, not a personal reading, it's a question about something that's pertaining to the spirit world, possibly his journey, but definitely the spirit world. This is your chance. It's toll-free in the U.S. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And if there's anybody international callers, it's not toll-free, but it's only a quick call. 001-530-876-3222.
Hi, I'm Mick Avery. As well as Spirit's Work on bbsradio.com every Monday at 7 and every Thursday at 1 p.m. PST, we have another radio show which is called Spirit Teaching. You can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. PST. If you'd like to know more about us, our books and CDs, book an Akashic reading, please go visit our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com, and also live at www.spiritsworkradio.com. As Sylvie said, I'm a deep trance medium, and each week live on the show, I channel Gregory Hay, who had an earth life 300 years ago. I have the ability to completely hand over my body to the spirit world so they may use it to speak through, and I know absolutely nothing about what has happened during this time. When I go into the deep trance state, my conscious mind and my spirit are transported elsewhere by the team who work with us, and then the spirit team bring me back again when Gregory Hay, the spirit communicator, leaves. I not only miss the whole show, but I very rarely remember where it was they took me either. But then that's actually what I do for the spirit world, and so without further ado, I'm going to hand you back to Sylvie. And there we are.
And there we are, and have a great show, yes.
Yes.
I will, thank you.
Aww.
Enjoy yourself where you're going in our life.
I will, thank you. Thank you very much. Good night.
Thank you, and good night. Okay. Gregory is the spokesperson for a group of spirits of higher intelligence called the White Cloud Group, and they consist of many great minds, as well as ordinary people, and between them they have access to great knowledge and wisdom. They've come to bring their teachings because there is a need for us to have understanding beyond the constraint of our human minds. Subject matter we cover, whether in our books or on our radio shows, is limitless, and will hopefully help you to become more knowledgeable and better informed as to the nature of your existence on Earth, as well as your continued life after physical death. Our mission is to bring truthful information and knowledge through our gifts of spirit to help people enhance their lives and the lives of others, and to restore the balance and the well-being of the planet. And if anybody has a show topic suggestion, then do get in touch and email us at enq@spirit-teaching.com. And of course, as Mick said, our website is spirit-teaching.com. If you would like to book an Akashic reading with us, you can find out all about that on the site. It's a fascinating and insightful reading, something probably that you've never had the like of before. So you can read all about it on the site. Hello, Gregory.
With love and light, and blessings be upon your pathway forever, my dear friend.
Thank you. Oh, my voice nearly went there. Okay. So, well, here we are then, part 12. Who would have thought at the beginning of this that this would have lasted this long? And it looks like we're going quite strong here because we only got to the part last week where you actually met Mick. You'd already met me and Maurice and various other members of the group.
Yes.
And then you met Mick.
Absolutely.
So you're going to take us on from there, presumably, today?
Yes. Well, after our first meeting, I have to really talk about where we went from there. And the situation was that we didn't then suddenly become firm bosom buddies or whatever, even though we were actually from the same soul group. The point to remember here is that, in a sense, we, I suppose you could say, had different missions, even though we were of the same vibrational index and had the same basis of understanding and foresight, being that that is the reason why we were of the same vibration. Understand, if you please, that the whole situation to do with my life in the spirit world had been somewhat of a revelation. Up to this point, I had continued to create as a part of the being of is. And in this respect, I, of course, was not Gregory Hay at this time, but this was, of course, before my earth physical life. And in this respect, I suppose you could say that I was a very graduating energy. I understood a great deal about how I could bring peace and security and serenity to the hearts and minds and conscious state of many different beings. So it meant that I was a very sunny disposition at this time. And I understand as well that this was the case for our dear friend, although he at this time had been quite reclusive and did not appear to share that much with those other spirit, in a sense, who were perhaps more, how can I say this, more vocal.
More gregarious?
Yes, quite so.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it appeared to be that there was this silent, sullen streak, in a sense, that we observed in our dear friend. And it was actually because, as we came to understand, I say we, I'm saying myself and other members of the group, we came to understand that as a spirit being, he had always been intensively aware of the condition of humanity and where it was moving towards. In a sense, then, when I actually left and had my physical journey in 1705, I actually did not feel in the slightest bit that I wanted to remember any aspect of my spirit life. It's not because I didn't want to grace any part of the physical journey with the aspirations that I'd brought about in my spirit journey, but that actually, more rather, I really wanted to have a free-fall existence. I wanted to know exactly what it really was like to have a physical state. And you must understand, my dear friends, that for many of you, you will have observed many situations in life that you had witnessed. You had witnessed, all of you, every single way of passing there could possibly be. Every form of infliction from one man to another, from one man to woman, or one man to child. Every conceivable method of passing was at this time contrived already. We're talking here about the early medieval period and also, of course, up to the point of 1705 of my own physical life. This, of course, was a selection of very traumatic times for the planet itself, although it had not been an en masse situation of extinction, as human beings in the main tended still not to dominate there. environment in such a way as to bring detriment to other forms of life. So humanity was still, in a sense, trying to live in harmony. At least, it seemed, on the surface. Yet there was always this stirring of greed within humanity that we could see from afar, and that destiny beckoned it this way.
So in those days, it was more a case of the debauchery and the awful things that people were doing to each other, well, and animals, presumably, but not so much as it is today, as we are still doing that, but also we are abusing the planet as well. Because in those days, we weren't so much abusing the planet, were we? It was before, really, just before all that started, really, wasn't it?
Yes, in truth, yes, my dear friend. The planetary abuse did not really begin until perhaps just a little over 300 years ago. I am talking this in generalistic terms. In hindsight, we can observe that certain parts of China that became abused, Africa, and most certainly even some tribal groups in the Americas also had abuse of their environment. In this way, of course, we can see that some groups, for example, in the deforestation of land, created deserts. Some groups in the deforestation of land as well created situations of great hardship and enormous deserts just by simply keeping one particular animal, which, of course, was the goat. The goat is responsible for an enormous amount of different deserts upon the planet's surface.
But could you ever have imagined it, at that time, though, that we would be at the stage that we are now, near the tipping point of where whether the planet is going to be habitable in 17 years' time?
Well, yes, quite so. I take a great understanding of what you say, my dear friend, because, plainly, if we had perhaps had a greater foresight in the spirit world, known to others, then perhaps it would have been that we would have seen the curse of certain situations of materialism which would have driven it thus far. In some senses, you can never tell what human beings are really going to do from one moment to the next. It makes the whole situation of why you are having a free will existence and why it is a free life. The point that you have to remember, however, is that this is not all a charade conducted by those in the spirit world. It isn't like that at all. It is not where you are all at the beholden state of some other higher beings who want to actually preordain every single thought and feeling and activity that you create. Indeed, there are many, many beings in physical life present today that we could never have accounted for their loathsome attitude and their great difficulty in actually having any sense of responsibility to their own natural environment and their world, and, of course, ultimately, their children's salvation and survival.
Yes.
However, we see that, in a sense, the pathways had already been met. I mean this not in disrespect to those who view life as being part of a pattern. Yet I'm saying here that this pattern can often be, I suppose, well-founded when you look and observe at various animals as they have come up and bred and interbred and then mutated and changed and altered for the positions of power that they have grasped in their physical lives. Rats and mice, after all, are a being which is quite virulent upon the planet and at times has outrun and outstripped humanity itself, particularly in medieval times when human beings tried to live together in close proximity. Now, what has this to do with my physical life or with my spirit life is quite plain in that it forms a part of the backdrop of who I am and what I have had observed before I actually had a physical life. This then meant that I was, in a sense, would have been tainted in my physical voyage had I remembered it, as oftentimes spent many people born at around this time and at earlier times of the 15th and 16th centuries and 17th as well, of course, that many people of those times, they actually had a very subdued spirit consciousness, quite simply because of the turbulent understanding which existed in the spirit world and the need for change which had to arise from beings actually communing with their spirit, which in fact many were loath to do. It wasn't that they didn't want to help humanity, but they saw it that it was far better to have a free will existence and observe the ways in which humanity continued to communicate. Communication, after all, has always been the greatest key to humanity's success. That, in a sense, is why we are here at this present time wishing to communicate on a large scale.
Well, I guess, you know, you could say that there are templates with other races that have lost their planets, like we're heading towards.
Yes.
But then again, they weren't human beings, so you can't actually do that, can you? Because we don't think the same.
No, exactly. So,
you know, are they equally as unpredictable, though, in different ways, obviously? But
why? Yes, I suppose so, to a certain extent. It is, of course, that certain strains of human understanding are quite predictable. Not all of them are as difficult to judge. But the point is to say that for many beings, we observe that there are situations and states of play which come into effect whereby humanity still surprises even us in the things that they do to one another.
Okay. I'd like to say thank you for anybody that may have joined us on Spirit's Work. You're listening to Spirit Guide Gregory Hay, being channeled by Deep Trance Medium Mick Avery. I'm Sylvie Avery, and this is Gregory's Journey in the Spirit World. If you'd like to join us with a question related to our subject, the phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you. The number is a toll-free number. It's 877-876-5227 in the U.S., and in Canada, it's 888-815-9756. Okay, so where would you like to go from here?
Well, so in a sense, that is the outline as to part of the reasoning as beings who came to the spirit world after having a physical existence at this time, around the medieval period, many of them understood that their own failings were something which had driven them toward wanting to study more, wanting to reevaluate themselves as spirit entity and identity. It meant to say that the way in which all of us had presumed much of our life, after all, there were many who were, in a sense, ideally, blissfully unaware of the situations of our own physical lives at the point of having them, and that we were blissfully unaware in that state of physical life as to what exactly was the potential for humanity's depravity. Now, in this respect, I make no apologies for my own life, for I did the best I could with the tools and the grammar and the language and the mental ability that I had at that time. However, what we see now is the change. And how this has transported in our lives, and in my life in particular, is really to do with the people that we have met. In recent times, I have been so fortunate enough to meet with really incredible people in their physical lives and incredible spirit beings in the spirit world. Nikola Tesla, for one, had been a being of a great eminence and understanding, and in a sense had no barriers in his physical life to what he actually could see as a range of possibilities. So too with Albert Einstein, and so too with many other marked notable individuals in physical life. And I have met them, and I have talked with them, and I have shared much of the understanding that they created in their physical life.
They work with the White Cloud Group.
Yes, quite so, but that's what I'm saying, really. It's part of the essence of the White Cloud Group, and why it was brought together was because of the understanding of these enigmatic people who actually had a physical life and who brought something so precious back with them to share with the spirit world. So not only were we observing these people's journeys, but also we were inputting to them too. We were bringing situations to their consciousness, all that we could, in order to try to help humanity to research themselves so that they could really understand who they really were.
Okay. So, what happened after Mick?
After which stage of his situation?
Well, after you met him.
Oh, very well. What happened to him afterwards?
What happened when you met Mick in the spirit world before either of you had had a physical existence?
Yes.
What happened then? You said that you went your separate ways. You didn't necessarily become bosom pals.
No, quite so.
Immediately.
Yes. But we actually had contact with one another. We bumped into one another on the stairs, in the halls of learning and things like that. We actually, I had been to some of the talks and situations that he had given to do with other animals. Usually it was to do with marine life, but not all the time. He also had a great deal to do with birds, wildfowl and things, creatures like that.
Mm-hmm.
He also had a great deal to do with lizards and snakes as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a sense, his gifts of experience were that he was, it appeared to be, quite indebted by all of these different forms of folk. It appears to be because he actually ran a very great empathy with them within their soul groups, and this was actually a part of the way in which this relationship dictated to in his life as a spirit being. And as I said before, as a spirit being, he was at times quite translucent, at times transparent. And yet at other times, he was actually very lucid and quite physical.
And what did he look like then?
In respect of features,
this is a very interesting
point.
Absolutely, Brent. Because don't forget, listeners, Mick had not at this time had a physical life.
Absolutely so.
On Earth, anyway.
Yes. So the energy is, in a sense, as I had said before, it was two nuclei, which actually resided within where you would say a physical being would be. As I am aware, you are looking at this in terms of a physical, rational being. So you are seeing a being that isn't physical. Well, then what does that mean if it isn't physical? You must have some representation, otherwise it would not be a factual experience for you to understand. So what I'm saying, friend, is that how he depicted himself was really to do with various different habits that he performed. That sometimes he, in fact, would actually borrow the wearing of actual physical garments, even though he had no physical state, representation, as a spirit being, you
see? Explain that a little more.
Well, so in other words, he would actually put clothes on and would actually, how should I say this? He would use the memory of situations that he had seen and observed other beings acquiring in their own physical lives.
Mm-hmm.
And he would borrow those memories from his own state as a conscious spirit being and use those to clothe himself.
Be like the invisible man walking around with a suit on.
Yes. In a sense, I understand. I have actually witnessed such similar things as that.
How strange. Did that seem strange to you? I mean, what did you look like at the time when you met? Because you hadn't had a physical life either.
No, that is quite true. And I was a stick of energy too.
Right.
But in this respect, I suppose, because I had at this time been communicating with animals. I, too, although, of course, I was of more of the cloven hoof variety, I, too, had actually also understood, oh, and mammals, of course, that I had actually understood and taken a part of myself to actually borrow identities of other species. Mm. And at times, I would be seen as a dog. And at other times, I would be seen as a rabbit or a hare. I liked wearing a hare's outfit. That was very good.
Why?
Well, because they are so enigmatic. They are so, can be so motionless. And I would just sit there on my bottom and observe. Not on my bottom, on the hare's bottom.
And
but
so,
that is what it felt
and then,
like.
And then when you borrow the cellular memory, and you've talked about this in other shows.
Yes.
So are you thinking like a hare thinks then as well?
Well, yes, apart from the fact that I am having conscious thought as myself,
right,
as
so
Gregor. Yes.
Okay, so you're not. No, so that's what I was thinking. What does a hare think?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
About as much as the hair on your head, friend.
Exactly, yes. Okay. All right, well, that's fascinating. So,
So what I was doing was, I remember that I was sitting there and I was humming to myself at the time, and there was a gentleman called Leonardo who came to me and said, well, what exactly are you? What's your true form? This is something, of course, that actually berates a lot of spirit beings in the spirit world, because you can never tell whether what you are seeing is actually who it is.
Really? It looks that real?
Oh, yes, absolutely so. Of course, you may see a representation of a dog, and it actually responds to you in every single way as you would expect a dog to be.
It's like Alice in Wonderland or something.
Yes, I understand. That's a sort of a land of make-believe,
mm-hmm.
where it's significant the kinds of dreams that writers such as that individual had within their own physical lifetime, and how that actually altered their own perception of themselves and the possibilities that lay ahead. In fact, yes, because you have to identify, you have to ask yourself, so who am I really? What is identity? Because you become one being through feeling. You become one being through touch, through sense of your own self, through touch of your own self, your skin. You observe it. If you are looking at a leaf, it is always going to be a leaf, unless you crunch it up and make it just a mass of cells. But it, the leaf, would still identify as being a leaf. In exactly the same way, if you, as a spirit being, having had a physical life, after you have brought about that situation, you didn't want to do that anymore, and you want to morphize into something else, or some other being or creature, you may be only at liberty to do that if your vibration index allows it, and if you have the compassion and foresight to actually be able to ask one to borrow their existence for a little while so that you can try it out to see what it feels like.
We do that here.
There's
a lot of people that are fed up with this.
Yes, I understand. And a lot of people think that they can shapeshift and do this and do that, clever things with their physical states. And I do not disagree with some of it. It is possible that some beings who perhaps have very great gifts of spirit or a great identity of their spirit outcome and spirituality, they may well actually say, well, yes, I'm going to shift now into being a horse. And voila, there you have a horse. That condition, however, is extremely rare and may happen only once in a whole generation's lifetime.
Okay, and we probably would never know about it anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what happened? What happened? Who else did you meet? What did you do? How did we get to the White Cloud Group?
How did we get to the White Cloud Group, indeed? As you remember, perhaps, when I was talking with White Cloud, rather communicating with and being with in his vibration, I began to understand that just by being there, it was something that would actually sit with me very deeply. This, incidentally, was actually before I actually even had a physical experience, that I actually was aware of White Cloud, but I didn't really know who he was.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
I knew of this being that I had had seen from afar,
mm-hmm.
and that I had understood was a great gatherer and bringer of love and knowledge and understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And this, in a sense, then, was something of my conscious memory as a spirit being, although it was not something that I took with me to my physical life. In fact, it was that I forgot it.
Mm-hmm.
As I forgot most things in my physical life, because the genetics of which I inherited were not that best placed for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I make no way of division toward my biological parents in this matter. It is purely the state of where I was born and what I was born into at that time that really dictated it.
Okay.
So, my dear friend, what actually happened then was that, as I recall, I remember seeing the visitation that was White Cloud. I remember hearing stories of him and of the very many secrets that seemed to be held within him and around him. It was really due to the fact that he was a being who I had understood as a spirit, had created worlds, had dealt with many different situations of grief, of physical life, and of also the great creativity that is possible within physical life. The boundless hues and energy which can come from the single mating of physical form to bring about perhaps thousands or millions even of beings, clones just like yourself, but with just a little slight difference. A slight difference which is enough to glorify in that whole perspective. In this way, it is that White Cloud brought together the energies of love, the strands of power, and the understanding of the greatest moments of is, to be able to dwell in those moments, so that enlightenment would not just come to some, but that it would help so many of us from our side of life who were actually waiting to have a physical existence and wanting to actually have a greater impact upon humanity that we observed. This, my friend, is exactly the same as the reasons as to why it was that I actually met Nikolai Tesla before he even had a physical life. And the situation surrounding him at that time was that he was dizzyingly preparing situations and scenarios to do with the spirit world, to do with the use of energy, to do with the use of how energy actually transports itself from the spirit world into physical reality.
So he planned all that, and basically he never lost that.
He never lost
childhood.
It. He never, ever lost it. In fact, the dream was always there. He always knew the cycle of the dream. It was just that it was not until he and his parents, he arrived with his parents on the shores of the Americas, that he actually managed to transform that dream into reality.
Okay.
So we see as well, of course, the many different beings to do with the natural world. As we have always said, the White Cloud Group is very much about the natural environment. And in this respect, there have been many, many different beings who have taken it upon themselves, into their hearts and minds, many native beings, of course, who have been rich in the tapestry of their environment and have been well aware of environmental pressures. This then meant that the White Cloud Group was beginning to form of many, many hundreds and hundreds of souls who had, it seems, this central force and focus in common, as we all had.
Okay, so it just sort of started happening, basically, did it? It was
yes.
Like synchronicity in the spirit world that attracted like-minded people together.
Yes, it was not actually a conscious decision by White Cloud, right, I'm going to set about bringing together a group of spirit beings to help humanity
okay.
in this respect.
Okay.
It wasn't actually like that, because he was still very much in reverie of his own acolytes of beings having a physical existence. He was watching and observing many beings who had come and gone of native, indigenous peoples. He had observed these.
Okay, but it was called the White Cloud Group ultimately because, and why?
Because his name was White Cloud.
Yes, but you said that he didn't actually say that he wanted the group to form.
No, exactly so.
So why White
but
Cloud?
In a sense, because he was the receiving and the giving energy to do with the group. He was the being, the central being, who had enough presence of self, yet was very subdued about that presence, that didn't want it to be broadcast. He was a being that continued to create worlds, not in his own image, but in the image that they wish to be created
okay.
and organized with those spirits of that situation. And so it wasn't really until he eventually had a physical life, and of course this was some time before our dear friend here and I first met, in fact, that White Cloud actually had a physical life. Yet we also knew of one another from a distance before that time. You understand?
You and Mick?
Yes.
Yeah.
Quite so. We had observed one another, but it was just one of those recognition situations, really, I suppose, because we both came from the same soul group, as, of course, was the same for you as well.
Yeah. But obviously White Cloud took more of an interest, more momentum the team got, presumably.
Yes, well, it in a sense happened over a period of time. You see, absolutely, from the point of King John, when he actually, just a little over 800 years ago, invoked the Magna Carta for the pure purpose of collecting taxes, it was, in fact, the whole principle behind how White Cloud had actually observed the situations and conditions. Because actually, King John at that time was not that much of a pleasant fellow.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was very selfish and greedy and wanted, in fact, to adequately cover every being that existed on, not on the planet's surface, but every being that existed in the country of England at that time. In order to collect the right taxes.
Mm-hmm.
That was the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, in a sense, the kind of being he was. The kind of being that White Cloud was that he was actually intensively observing this individual. And in the same way, it was that he was in observation of many other notable figures throughout the course of history. William Wilberforce was somebody that he had observed and watched very closely because of the humanity that he, as an individual, had in the face of extreme adversity. Robert Walpole, as well, was an another individual that he could see contained great strengths, and that these were strengths that he began to understand were impressions of the spirit that needed to be redefined and helped to survive.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So more people were gathered to form the group.
So more and more people gathered to form the group and, in a sense, began communication.
So it became more structured, basically.
It became much more structured, yes. There had been other groups beforehand, you understand, but in a sense, it was that we felt that many of these groups were actually coming from products of religion and that kind of thing. And we felt that religion, in a sense, was the cause of many of the anxieties and the misunderstandings which had developed between different human beings. So we saw in this event that religion in itself was something of great difficulty. I actually asked White Cloud about this, and he said, of course, naturally, well, that's just a reflection of their own identity, because it doesn't really exist here. And I said, well, why do they carry it on then? Why doesn't it just disintegrate? And they said, well, because there is a need, and their need arises out of the ashes of deprivation. So they need to have it, so there it be.
Okay, but there must have been somebody who instigated meetings, who suggested how the whole thing was going to work, the structure. There must have become a structure to the group.
Yes, I would have to say, my dear friend, that the structure really just gravitated. It built over a period of time. We became aware, not myself really completely, but many other individuals became aware of the progress and how it would be that we would actually have to bring about an actual physical property in order, for example, to actually be able to control our dear friend here, even to the slightest degree. The point is that many people maybe misunderstand about what this aspect of control really is. Quite simply, within the White Cloud group, we have tried to make it our business to control in, not that we are controlling, but to adequately bring about control so that, for example, we were able to maintain his life force.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy task to do. Having a live being, as it were, we had practiced a lot of times, of course, but never actually engaged it within a live being. So we were unaware as to exactly how it was going to work. And this is why he actually had a situation in his physical life when our dear friend here became in service to Spirit, and that after the agreement that he had made, that you had also made with those of us in the Spirit world, it became apparent that there would have to be a lot more presentation, a lot more demonstration to do with the spirit world and our ability to bring about this life force change, even though temporarily as it was to be.
What were the other options before? I mean, did you realize this was going to be the case before he had a physical life, or did you think that you could influence him, you know, like, say, on a mental level, like clairvoyance or clairaudience or something, to do it? And then discovered that you would have to actually know, I'm going to have to actually take over the whole body.
Yes, quite so.
Because it's not going to be accurate enough.
It's not going to work enough. And
yeah.
We did not actually facilitate that at the beginning.
So you didn't practice this in the spirit world with him before?
No, indeed not.
Right.
No, because we did not know exactly at what vibration he was going to be able to accommodate us. And that was why it was, dear friend, that we had to send some 60 or 70 others before me, so that they would be able to identify what his weaknesses were, his inherent strengths, what were actually the causes and effects of those interactions he had already had in physical reality, and how that was actually going to play a part in his continuing physical life, how he was going to react then to my invading his physical space and he actually having a consciousness experience outside of the physical state.
Mm.
That was always going to, in a sense, be a problem because he's just so inherently nosy.
Mm-hmm. As most people are.
As most people are, of course. And that really is why it is that we have such a struggle with so many people. Oftentimes,
yes,
it is because of these very simple situations of an inability to let go.
I was just going to say, can you tell the listeners what being nosy has to do with making it difficult?
Yes, absolutely so. So if a person is nosy in that they want to butt their minds into whatever thought or situation or condition happens to be being brought about by the spirit world, if you're that kind of being that does that, then it's actually going to be extremely difficult for you to be able to subdue your mind long enough so that the physical state the consciousness can actually be removed and the physical state to be enhanced by this other spirit entity.
Yeah.
Regardless of what it is, which is actually, as I say, why it was that over the period of 18 months that we tried various different things, really. Long before, in fact, it became obvious that we were actually going to have to push him up there in order to for the situation to take over.
Yes, for him to be noticed and
yes,
be developed. I see.
So in many respects with this, then, it had already been something that we'd thought of, but we didn't understand exactly how much it was going to affect him or not, and how much his mind was going to get in the way or not. And that's always the same condition for anyone who is wishing to undertake this kind of work.
And when was the turning point that you realized it was going to work?
Actually, it happened at a point where there was an older woman who was speaking through him one day.
Mm-hmm.
And that there became also at the same time an energy which was to do with one of his other guides, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was this energy which was present, which in fact actually some people in the room visited with, understood.
Mm-hmm.
And yet others, it completely escaped them, went right over their heads.
Mm-hmm.
So we found that that was an interesting situation because some people, after all, had seen and appeared as it had appeared that our dear friend here had morphed into Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, do you remember that? But in fact, that was not the case. It was me.
It was you?
Yes.
Mm.
Absolutely so. I was just trying it out. That's not to say, friends, that I look like Jesus. Nothing at all, really.
It's probably just a dark shadow, though you had maybe had a dark shadow around the chin.
Oh, yes, quite so. Absolutely. But it actually looked like a beard.
Yes, yes.
And that was, in fact, what the case was. I wasn't able to maintain the presence for more than a minute
mm-hmm.
before I had to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so that, in a sense, is how it is that it's all a testing ground. That no matter what group works with you as a spirit being having a physical existence, it doesn't matter what group works with you. What matters is what they do with that relationship.
Absolutely, and even though you make the plan and the arrangements to do certain things before you come here, it's hit and miss whether you actually bring that to fruition.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Absolutely, of course.
Because
yes.
What was the original? Okay, hello, caller.
Hi, you said something a couple of this is Susan.
Hi.
You said something a couple of minutes ago about that you had to push Mick up. You had to push him up. And you knew you had to do that, and finally you did that, and then it worked. What did you mean by that?
Yes, my dear friend, we actually had to instigate him to stand up and be counted, to actually use his words, use his language, use his contact with the spirit world, of which he was actually unsure at that time, and of which he was actually feeling a little difficult. Not that he was in fear, but that he just was not accomplished at that time.
Not confident with his gift. He
yes,
wasn't sure whether
so.
It was really, really happening to him or not. And
yes, or
how
was
well
it him or was
you
it
don't, you didn't use any of his words or all your words.
At this time, we do not use any of his words, although we understand through our studies of human behavior and language that we have tried to catch up to situations of the modern state. Hence, my dear friend, we understand the certain words are in at this moment in time and other ones are not. Much
okay.
as the same as do about much of the language that I had when I was in physical state. If I talked of it now, you would not understand a word of it, not a word of what I was saying. So it would be completely useless.
Yeah, I've been wondering about that, actually.
Yes.
Okay, I think I understand a little bit. Okay, thank
yes,
you.
Well,
thanks, Suzanne.
Thank you, dear friend.
Okay,
thank
goodbye.
You. Bye-bye.
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 Yes, so I have no idea what I was going to say then. Okay, yes, because some of the people that spoke through him before you were children,
yes,
weren't they?
Yes.
How did that work with, and sometimes it didn't look very comfortable for Mick either, I have to say. How did that work? I mean, because you actually control his breathing.
Yes. Well, it's not me, actually, that controls his breathing. It's controlled for me by a diaphragmatic instrument which is used via the vortex that we bring about this condition through. So it means to say then that, yes, I am then able to speak my thoughts and they work the diaphragm and lungs and all of that and cheeks and mouth parts and all of that to do with the collusion and the instrumentation of my words, of my vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, of course, I am present within the physical state, but not within the physical state. This means to say that my conscious state is actually at this moment in time working the apparatus which helps to fixate certain muscle movements. And that helps me to gauge exactly how it is that words and language are being modified and brought to the surface. Naturally, this is something which I had to learn to do as a spirit being and that he had to learn to give of that time when others were trying to use him. This was part of the process.
Okay, well, amazing. I'd love to know next time what it actually looks like when we're going to be doing this. What happens? What does it look like your side of life?
Yes.
How many people are doing what? What are they doing?
Yes.
While we're actually doing this?
Yes, absolutely so. I would be delighted to do that.
That's fascinating. Thank
With
you, Gregory.
With love and light, then. God bless.
Thank you. Wow. So, I'd like to say thank you for anybody who joined us tonight on Spirit's Work. Thank you, Suzanne, for your phone call. Just like to mention our website again, which is www.spirit-teaching.com. You can find out more information about us, our books, our work, book yourself an Akashic reading, and as well as BBS Radio on Mondays and Thursdays. We have another show, radio show, which is Spirit Teaching on artistverse.com on Tuesdays. Well, thank you so much for listening, and do join us again next time on Spirit's Work. My name is Sylvie Avery, and until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal. Knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.
Bye.